Welcome to Nerds on the Rock, episode 17. One more, we're almost able to drive in New York City. I don't know what else we can do at 18. I guess we can sign up for the Army.
Well, you can go to an R-rated movie at 17.
We can. Yeah. I hope it's
or
not an R-rated Sonic movie.
M-rated Sonic game.
You know, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if Sega tried that. I mean, they've tried everything else in the guy's career, so.
Just bigger guns, that's all we need.
Bigger guns. Yes, and this episode is dedicated to Sonic the Hedgehog due to the release of Sonic 4 on iPhone, Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network, and WiiWare. And I'm almost certain anything else you can get your hands on that game will probably be on at some point.
It's on my watch right now.
You mean your iPod Nano?
Yeah.
So I guess we, and joining me this week is a very special all-star cast. First up is Dylan, who's a regular on Nerds on the Rock. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Another guest who has appeared on several episodes is Adam Scheer from, let me see if I got this correct yet, the Gamers Cast podcast.
Yep, that's right.
Yes, nailed it. And from Trending Cinema, John Tilton.
Hello.
So, I mean, let's throw it out there. What was everybody's first experience with Sonic the Hedgehog? Adam.
My first experience with Sonic was probably back in 2002. Sonic Adventure 2 Battle was the first Sonic game I ever bought, and I remember the first time playing that episode, the first level of that game where Sonic's escaping from the city, like kind of on a snowboard type thing, going down the streets. I just remember being just amazed by that. That was my first real experience with Sonic.
Wow, that is a really recent experience. That also happens to have one of my favorite theme songs in the game.
Oh, yeah, that song's good.
Yeah, I think I have it on my Zune, Escape from the City. John, what is your first experience?
My first experience was with Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which was also... This wasn't my first gaming experience, but the first console I owned was the Sega Genesis. I was given as a gift to me by one of my dad's coworkers just got her son a Nintendo 64, and so I had gotten – or no, that wasn't it. He went to college. He went to college, and apparently video games weren't allowed at college back in those times. So the Sega Genesis was given to me with a handful of games, most of them sports games, but the one gem was Sonic the Hedgehog 2. And so I'd play that game all the time, and – it's still one of my favorite things to just pick up and fool around with.
I can't believe they didn't allow games at college at that time.
I'm making up reasons. I don't know what the reason is.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I couldn't imagine my 4 years without my GameCube and my 360 later on. And I think, my Wii senior year. Were we in 360 senior year, my GameCube up until then. And Dylan, what was your first experience with Sonic the Hedgehog?
Well, we were always more of a Nintendo kind of family, but my cousin had a Genesis, I guess. First real time, the only time for a while, till like Shadow the Hedgehog came out. I remember playing, I don't know, probably Sonic 3 on my cousin's Genesis, like a couple times, but not really anything all that big. And then I played Shadow the Hedgehog and had this emulator disc for my original Xbox that had first few of Sonic games on it, so I played those when I got that disc back in, I don't know, early 2000s. That was my first experiences.
And I started with Sonic the Hedgehog 1. The Genesis was not the first console that my family owned, but it was the first one I was given. I got as a gift in Christmas of 92. I believe I got it with Sonic the Hedgehog, Ultra Beast, and Batman Returns. And Sonic was, and still is, one of my favorite gaming franchises. I'm not quite sure why, as we'll get to in a bit. But, yeah.
Because of the long list of wonderful games that have come out since 1996 on it.
Yeah, it's kind. Sonic is kind of a franchise that's built on really good memories. as much as it pains me to say. And I guess we can start at the beginning with Sonic 1. I mean, you've all had different jumping on points, but have any of you gone back and played the original?
Yep.
I have. Played it over the weekend a bit, actually.
Is that your first time playing it?
that I can remember. Probably have played it before, though.
Well, the biggest thing with going back to play the original, and this is why it's always one of the awkward ones for me to play, is that it's the only game without his spin dash move.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I actually got the... I had played it before. My cousin, once he upgraded his video game console, he gave me all of his old Sega Genesis games, and that's where I ended up getting, like, a ton of, you know, the essential Sega Genesis catalog. And so I played Sonic 1 a lot back in the day, but what I hadn't realized until I went back to it now, I got the Sega Genesis collection on PlayStation 3, and it's that spin move is completely missing, which I think I should definitely take for granted playing 2 and 3, and it just made me not want to play through all of 1 anymore.
I'm kind of the same, because the spin move is, like, essential to the core Sonic experience.
Yeah.
And not having it, and I understand it's the first game. I mean, not Mario didn't do everything right the first time. Well, actually, I don't think Mario has changed anything he's done.
Well, if you go back and play, there's stuff that's different about Mario, but if you go back and play the first one, you don't feel like anything's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the spin dash became such a core part of the franchise that it's really weird to play through it again without it.
And it's also necessary, I think, for a lot of the quickness of Sonic.
Yeah.
Because you'll get stuck, and if you're stuck right before one of the loops, you have to do spin dash to get back up the loop. Whereas in the first game, you have to backtrack, get enough speed, and then go back. So it essentially changes how you're interacting.
Play the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Sonic 1 also has the... only game that has the structure of, I think, three levels per zone? Or, wait, is it? How does Sonic break up? Is it zones and acts?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, I believe Sonic the Hedgehog's the only one that has three and a boss battle, where with two they started doing two and a boss battle at the end. Sonic 4 kind of goes back to the original with three zones and then a boss stage. So did anybody beat Sonic 1?
I could barely get past the third zone. I'm so bad at the Sonic games. I love replaying the levels, though. It's a lot of fun.
Sonic games aren't, I'm not going to say they aren't difficult, but a lot of it is, I guess, memorization or quick reflexes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The parts I hate are always the instant death traps where you just kind of, like, you know, like you're zooming through and you just kind of miscue a jump because you didn't know what to expect. And you end up missing the platform, so you just fall to an abyss.
Yeah.
Especially if you have, like, invincibility at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
Dying with invincibility is probably the most frustrating thing that can happen in video games. And Sonic's not the only one it happens with.
I guess speaking of invincibility, Sonic was also home to a bunch of unique, at least at the time, I think, gameplay elements, one of which is his water levels, in which he actually has to find air bubbles. So thoughts on that, because I'm sure everybody has fond memories of hearing that din-din-din-din-din-din-din-din music as he searches for that air bubble with 5 seconds left. Has nobody ever encountered that fear, that anxiety of trying to find something before he dies?
I sort of like it.
I like it too. It's just anxiety. It's kind of like the music at the end of Mario stage if you're running out of time where it speeds up, so it kind of forces you to rush.
But no one runs out of time at Mario stages.
You'd be surprised if you want to take it. I've taken usual strolls around some of these stages. I mean, at this point, I can probably beat most Mario stages. I'm not going to say what my eyes close before somebody actually challenges me to do that. But, yeah.
I do think, though, this is a little bit off topic. You can tell me to stop and cut this if it's too off topic. But I do think one of the reasons I like Sonic, classic Sonic better than classic Mario is that sense of speed with the platforming where you can basically just go and hope it works and, you know, go through a whole bunch of different paths. Where in Mario, it's a lot more precise and, you know, I play a lot of video games, but whenever I'm playing classic Mario, actually my friend Luke told me this the other day, I just die all the time because I'm really impatient impatient with my platforming. So I'll always just want to keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. And maybe that's because Sonic was one of the first games I ever owned. And that's one of the things I love about it is I can just sort of go through and you know, feel like I'm the king of the world of the platformer, whereas in Mario, it's a lot of memorizing and getting everything down just right and timing and waiting and benefiting from that, where Sonic, zip through and enjoy the ride.
That's actually a good point, because I guess we should have talked about how Sonic came about. And part of the reason is that the notion that they wanted a game that was like the opposite of Mario, where Mario kind of rewarded exploration, you know, like finding hidden pipes, finding the vines that take you up to clouds and stuff like that. Sonic emphasized speed and getting through it as fast as possible and finding the shortest route from A to B. And yeah, they are the two different design philosophies in platformers. I think everything else kind of falls in between them, where, you know, either lean towards the Mario side where you're still methodical, or the Sonic side where you just kind of put obstacles in a person's way, not so much as a way to, you know, slow them down for them to explore, more of a way to say, okay, you know, this is a speed bump, find out how to take it and continue past it as quick as possible.
Yeah, the sense of speed is what makes Sonic different from anything out there. I mean, it just feels amazing when you just go through this level and see Sonic just going down and the speed gets faster and he's just pounding enemies and you're just enjoying the ride, as John said.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is that it also has become his Achilles heel as he tried to make the leap into 3D.
Yep.
Because it's really difficult for them to find a suitable way to replicate that sense of speed and still give the players some form of control over the game where it actually affects the game.
You know, I think also part of the problem is them not completely accepting that that's what makes them special. Because I think they've had this problem even in Sonic 2 and Sonic 3. Specifically in Sonic 3, I'm thinking of this is Sonic and Knuckles. Where the very first level, the Mushroom Zone, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
You'll be zooming along, and then all of a sudden you'll hit these sort of gluey net chain type things, and it'll just drag you, and it like pulls you back to a location. You have to like spin dash to get out. And I think Sonic has this tendency to want to stop you from going so fast, where that's really the thing that makes it so much fun. And Brian Lee O'Malley, who writes the Scott Pilgrim series, he actually had a great tweet a few days ago. He was playing Sonic 4, and I forget exactly his wording, but he just said, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog 4 seems like it's, you know, this it has a mission to, like, stop you from having fun, and the fun is being fast as Sonic. And I think I haven't played through more than the demo of Sonic 4, but I think that what he was saying there is even true about some of the classic Sonic titles.
Yeah. I think my problem with Sonic 4, and I guess, is that it kind of, it pays homage to the older games, but it's kind of in a weird state where they're trying to make him, you know, like they're trying to warrant the fact that Sonic games are pretty short. You can generally run through them in about an hour if you know the stages well enough. And they wanted to kind of expand that, where Sonic has this whole momentum thing where it takes a bit longer for you to get going.
Yeah.
But the game also tends to share you down a lot more often for you to stop and get going again.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that bothered me about it.
And I guess before we move on from Sonic 1, Sonic 1 was the introduction of Dr. Robotnik, or Eggman, if anybody prefers, and if you do, you can just hang up now.
No.
Do you prefer Dr. Eggman?
Actually, no. I was just making...
Okay. I guess for some people, it wouldn't make much of a difference. Like, for Adam, who came in with Sonic Adventures, he was already Eggman by the time you got to know him.
Yeah, that's true. I don't mind either one, but, I mean, I like Robotnik a little bit better. It sounds cooler.
See,
Robotnik is far cooler.
Well, you see, to me, Robotnik works as a name. Eggman works as a... Because Eggman is technically what Sonic insults him with. Because he's, you know, around... He shouldn't accept that as a name. You don't have somebody you call like a jerk face who say, yeah, I'm a jerk face, whatever, call me that. So, I mean, yes, I believe his name is still Dr. Ivo Eggman Robotnik, but he shouldn't accept that as a nickname because this is his arch nemesis making fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
But like I've said this before, Robotnik is probably the most persistent villain in video game history, as he, I mean, Bowser kind of had this role in Super Mario Brothers, but it wasn't actually Bowser in every stage, but Robotnik is actually the boss in every single world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know what type of money this guy makes to make those machines and come back each and every game.
That's a good question.
Thoughts on Dr. Ivo Robotnik and his mean bean machines? Is that, but yeah, any thoughts on him as a general villain, the machines? Somebody's iPhone's going off.
don't worry about that.
Earl, I just really like the point you brought up about, I had never thought of that, how he, you know, even when you were saying it, before you explained that, he does actually appear in every single level in the Sonic games. Cause immediately I thought, well, Bowser's shows up way more than Robotnik, but, you know, not really. He shows up at the end of every castle. But well, yeah, even, Robotnik is every single boss stage, at least in the first three Sonic games.
And I believe he's in Sonic 4 as well. I don't think he's, I believe in the 3D ones, he's in Sonic Adventure 1 and 2. That role, he doesn't show, I know he's not the final boss in most of them. He's not the final boss in Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, I know that much for sure. I never got to the end of Sonic Unleashed. Actually, I haven't gotten to the end of many 3D Sonic games, so that's a story for a bit later on.
I guess props to them, though, for... because obviously the reason I didn't even put that together right away is because they're changing the boss completely every single level. You know, when you're fighting Bowser, it's the same fight, right? Essentially, maybe there's some hammers or fireballs in the mix, but with Robotnik, it's a completely different type of idea every time you face him.
Yeah, but I mean, if Nintendo wanted, they could, I mean, they kind of did that with the inclusion of the Koopa Kids in Super Mario Bros. 3, where they kind of had the similar boss battle, but they changed it up by just changing the basic attack patterns. Cause I mean, the Koopa Kids are all pretty much the same thing, except, you know, one's on a ball, so you have to jump higher. One does a ground pound, so you have to jump when they jump. One shoots like rings or whatever. Whereas Robotnik, he's a different boss, but he's in it every time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So even while Nintendo will change up boss fights, and especially if you look at, you know, something like Super Mario Galaxy today, all the boss fights are different. But if you look at the Bowser fights, it's the same type of Bowser fight, even in, you know, more recent Mario titles. But then having Robotnik, it's not a variation of beating Robotnik, and it gets increasingly harder. Like you were saying, Earl, it's a different type of Robotnik.
Yeah.
Even though it's the same character.
So
when Nintendo changes it up, it's a different boss. It's a different person.
And I mean, either one works. I've just never really got why Robotnik's been so obsessed with these woods and creatures. I mean, I guess he wants to do something evil with them, but I don't think they've ever actually explained it. Or does he just want the power of the Chaos Emerald?
He captures the animals and he turns them into robots. I think he wants the Chaos Emerald. I know in the later ones he definitely does, but they never make that clear in the earlier ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about to say, also, what type of machine does he have that turns woodland creatures into robots, but somehow hitting them with a spin attack turns them back into woodland creatures?
I always thought they were inside controlling them.
I always thought they turned into them.
Yeah, I think they turn into them too.
Oh, really? I always imagined like they were controlling the robots, or maybe even like they were sucking their powers. The robot was sucking their aliveness, for lack of a better term, to run. And then when you killed the robot, it would disappear. But the animal inside controlling it, or giving it its source of energy, would... But even me explaining it now makes me realize how dumb of a...
Well, I mean, it's Sonic. It's possible in so many ways. It's just, I always assume, because I mean, it always looked like your point was the freedom, because your freedom when you hit them and at the end of most stages, I forget if it's at the end of Sonic. Oh, not the end of, at the end of boss battles, he usually hits that machine and it pops open and you have like the little woodchin creatures jumping out for joy. So I always assume that, you know, like Robotnik took them and turned them into these evil robot henchmen things. But, Sonic 2 saw the inclusion of Miles Teal's powers, who would become Sonic's long-standing sidekick, and honestly, for the longest time, I always thought it was a chick.
Well, his name is pretty sexy, though. Tail, Miles Prowler.
Well, I blame it on the cartoon, because he sounded like a high-pitched girl and said he was supposed to be like a 7-year-old boy or something like that. Sonic 2. Who played that? I know some of you have, because you started with that game.
I played it.
Thoughts on it?
Let's just see.
Not a fan.
I'm trying to figure out if... I guess that confirms it. I was trying to figure out if the reason... I think Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is the best Sonic game, and I was trying to figure out how much of that is nostalgia factor and how much of that is just well-designed levels and great music.
I would say that Sonic the Hedgehog 2 remains as my favorite Sonic game as well. I think they tried to go too far with adding stuff in, as you mentioned, like the showdown and stuff with Sonic and Knuckles.
Even like the powers and stuff like that too. In Sonic 3.
Yeah, with the shields and stuff.
Yeah, it seems like.
Yeah. And I think this is the, it's the first game with Sonic co-op and competitive modes. Not that co-op really meant anything in Sonic 2, because Tails just, the person controlling Tails just kind of tagged along, and if Sonic went zooming off on his own business, the Tails character would eventually have to catch up, so he would lose control of them. Which used to suck when I was Tails. But, yeah, it was the first case I could think of like a co-op platform, which is kind of interesting because Mario took another, 17 years to get there?
Well, their co-op was take turns.
Well, yeah, that's not co-op, though. I mean, I think you could do that with Sonic 2 as well. I could be mistaken. But there was also the versus mode, which is actually pretty cool, which is like a race through a normal Sonic stage to see who can get there and fastest and collect the most coins, I believe. And that was fun.
Did you guys, when you would play two-player in the single-player mode, would you play with a friend and sort of have whoever was Tails do all the dirty work of, like, you know, risky killing the boss moves? Because, you know, if Tails got injured, you wouldn't lose any coins.
I actually never thought about that. I used to make, you know, I used to, because I think 2, or is it 3, where he can pick you up and fly you over certain parts.
Yeah, that's 3.
Okay. So yeah, Tails served no purpose to me in Sonic 2.
Yeah, well, we would do that. My friend Craig and I would, we would always play Sonic 2. I would be Sonic, he would be Tails, and he would go and try to pull off some risky maneuvers while I would try to save the coins so we could continue to get the extra lives consistently. And that's how we would progress really far at our younger age and being less experienced with the game. We would sort of use that as a strategy to preserve our lives.
Interesting. Cool. I was going to say that Sonic 2, again, introduced an element, or, again, I don't remember much about Sonic 1 because I don't play it that often, where you can actually die after boss battles, which kind of pissed me off.
Yeah.
And the first example of that was, I think, Chemical Panic Zone.
Yep.
So I'm assuming I'm not the only one who made that final attack on Robotnik and kind of missed the platform as it was tilting the wrong way.
I actually don't think I've ever missed it, but I know that you could die there because you can die right before it too.
Yeah.
And that's where I would die a lot. But I usually would just have this, and I still do have this like fear of falling in and like finally defeating that boss. Because I don't like playing that boss either, because of the limited space it gives you.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the stage to stand on, and I would find myself always like, you know, like I said before, I like to sort of rush into things and try to beat the boss really fast and keep moving. And because of that, I would often just jump into the, or miss Robotnik completely and jump into the, the purple ooze and die.
I've actually done it before where I've beaten the boss and either jumped off or missed the platform and died after the battle. And there's nothing worse than defeating the boss and dying. Like, it pisses you off so much. And of course, there was the Death Egg boss, which I hated so much. Because it's the only, I think it's the only boss where you're given no coins whatsoever to start with, so you have to go through Metal Sonic.
To be honest, I actually just beat that for the first time a couple of weeks ago. I would always get to, I would beat Metropolis, I would have a ton of extra lives left, and I would get to the very last, like, Sky Zone.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, feels like a completely different game and is stupidly impossible. Like, I guess it's not impossible, but it just does things to piss you off.
I actually like Sky Zone.
I am not a fan. And then on top of that, the boss, I mean, yeah, like you were saying, Earl, you go through a series of multiple bosses. One of them's this like Metal Sonic, which is just, and that's, you know, total memorization with beating him. And then later, yeah, you get no coins, and when it's, you know, trial and error style gameplay, especially in, you know, sort of today's gaming culture, it's very frustrating to go through something like that.
Well, I mean, it's easy once you kind of earn the pattern. The thing with me, and this goes back to your playing Sonic impatiently, is that sometimes I would charge into him when I knew his fingers would be exposed.
Yeah.
And that always pissed me off, especially if you knew you got him on the ropes and you just kind of make this impulsive, I want to finish this battle as soon as possible so I don't die, so I'm going to jump in and die anyhow move. And that used to piss me off so much. But I have beaten the game several times. I do enjoy it, and it has, I think Sky Chase was the one I was referring to, where he's on the top of the airplane. That's awesome. And then after that's Wing Fortress, when you're on that spaceship.
Yes, that's right, yep.
And, Dylan, why do you dislike this game?
I don't dislike it. I was just kind of, the first three I played back-to-back and was just looking at my notes to see what I thought of it, actually. It might be my favorite one, actually.
Oh, okay. And Adam?
Wait, which Sonic game we're talking about? Sonic and Knuckles?
Sonic 2.
Oh, Sonic 2. I mean, I played it... You know, I haven't played much of it. I remember, you know, I had the Sonic Genesis collection a Sonic Classic collection on GameCube, and I played this game at the waiting room at my dentist's office when I was a kid. I remember it being good. Again, with all the classic Sonic games, I could only make it past maybe the second or third zone, but I did enjoy it. The inclusion of Tails, I felt like it didn't really add anything, but, you know.
At the time, I think it was kind of like adding Luigi to Mario. You know, they just kind of wanted, because I mean, the system only supported two players at the time. So it's kind of like give the second person a reason to do something because it was their hallmark franchise.
You guys had to think outside the box and use it for the boss battles.
Apparently that's also something we missed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd actually be really interested to know if they had any, if they meant for that to be a strategy at all, or if it was just, you know, for kicks and giggles, here you can add a second person.
I assume they just didn't want to penalize people for if the second player screwed up.
Yeah.
Kind of like how New Super Mario Brothers has the bubble system where if somebody stays behind, you just kind of press A.
Which you can also use to strategize really well.
Yes, you can. The problem with that is when four people decide it's a great idea to do it at the same time. Which happens way too often.
But it's always hilarious when it does.
That's one of those games where I think you have to be one of those people who enjoy playing video games to play video games and not kind of competitive. Because it is a great game. You can screw up your friends just as easy as you can help them out.
Though I do find, sorry, this is Mario, I do find that it can get very annoying when you get in each other's ways. Like, not in a fun way, like not even Because there's times when, like, the bubble thing happening once in a while is funny, and there's times when you sort of screw up with each other and throw blocks and throw someone off a cliff, and that's funny. But when, like, someone just legitimately, like, gets in your way or blocks you from jumping on a platform, especially in the harder levels,
that's really annoying. I could see how the second half of the game would get really, especially some of those airships where you have very small retail space on some of these. And that's kind of why I started the system of like a buddy system where you just kind of pick up another person. Because they can't do anything once you have them picked up. So you just kind of carry them around. And it saves half the screen. So, Sonic 2, everybody thumbs up. Except, I'm curious, what is it about Sonic games you find so difficult?
It's not just that. I'm just very bad at platformers like Sonic. I don't know. Maybe I should really try again and really, like, rebuy the games. I know I have the original Sonic on Virtual Console and iPhone, so maybe I'll go back into those and really try my hardest to beat them and get better with them. Sonic 4 has been okay, though.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of curious to see your Twitter updates for that. Friggin' Robotnik destroyed me again. I hate Sonic. And I guess that would put us to Sonic 3, which saw the introduction of Knuckles,
Echidna.
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 Okay, and
it's hard.
He was introduced as an evil foe to Sonic, I think. He wasn't evil, but I think he was in collusion with Robotnik because Robotnik gave him some false information. Because they go to Knuckles Island to take the Chaos Emeralds. No, wait. The plane crashes at the end of Sonic 2, at the start of Sonic 3, and they crash on the island, and I think Knuckles ends up picking the Chaos Emeralds up. And I guess Robotnik tells him that Sonic's kind of like a douche. So Knuckles does everything he can to stop Sonic from progressing in the game.
He sort of reminds me of the Green Ranger / White Ranger from Power Rangers, in that, you know, he sort of starts on this one side, and then for whatever reason that no one really knows, ends up on the hero side at some point in the series.
Well, they explain why. they had that whole arc in Power Rangers, and I know this is off topic, but it was the Greenwood Evil arc where Tommy was originally controlled by, like, it was a Power Ranger Reader controlled, and over the course of the 5 episodes, they were finally able to break her spell over him.
I had not remembered that.
You should have mentioned it. They actually, on the Power Rangers website, they're airing one old episode per day, and they had Green with Evil like 2 weeks ago. and I remember that because as a kid, we used to have Power Rangers. So like, we used to go to my grandfather's house after school because both of my parents worked night, and we would watch that same VHS like every single day. For weeks and weeks. I can't do that now as an adult. I just hate watching the same thing in close proximity. But, yeah, Power Rangers is awesome. And, I mean, since we're already off on this tangent, has anybody checked out any of the Sonic cartoons?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was, like, Sonic X or whatever. There was one that aired, like, early 2000s that was... Yeah. Really crappy.
Yeah, I saw that one too. I watched the whole first season of that. I watched some of the second season from what I remember. I was a huge fan of that show.
Yeah, Sonic X is actually one of the few that's actually based on a game, since it's based on the Sonic Adventure series.
Was there a TV show slightly before that too, and maybe in the late 90s?
Yeah, there were several of them.
Okay. Because I have vague memories watching one, but I'm pretty certain it was before the 2000s.
There was, if I'm not mistaken, there are 4 Sonic cartoons. There is Sonic, there's Sonic the Hedgehog, which aired on weekday mornings on, I want to say, Fox, and it starred Joe White, Steve Urkel as Sonic. He was Sonic on the first 2 cartoons, and this was a more kids-friendly cartoon, in which Sonic was just kind of like a goofball who attacked Robotnik, who was hung out with Scratch and Grounder, who were enemies from Sonic 2, but they were like his henchmen. Then there was Sonic, what people call Sonic Saturday Morning, which aired on Saturday mornings on ABC. And it had Joe White again as Sonic. But this one was a bit more of a loose interpretation. And it's actually the one that the Sonic comic books are based off of, in which Sonic is a freedom fighter, and it's like a group of animals banded together to take on the evil Dr. Robotnik. Then there is Sonic Underground, which is with Sonic and two of his siblings, who are a musical group who have magical instruments.
Wow.
And then there's Sonic X, which is based off of Sonic Adventures, which was aired on Fox. Fox.
Yeah.
And I've seen those all. There's also an anime movie, but, yeah.
Actually, Sonic X was on the weekend, or Saturday, I guess.
Yeah, Saturday.
I only caught the last few minutes, but it was worse than I remembered it, and I remember not liking it that much.
Sonic's one of those properties that's really tough to do outside of video games. I mean, again, Sega can't even get it right in 3D. So, you know, it's very difficult to have a cartoon where the main character just kind of speeds through everything, where you just have to kind of slow down and actually have progressions and storylines and stuff like that. Some do it better than others. But as a kid, it was, good, keen fun.
It's true. I used to love those as a kid. Probably if I watched them now, I probably wouldn't like them as much.
But I think that can be said about almost anything.
Just about.
That you watch as a kid.
Not really. Like a lot of the Nickelodeon stuff, like Rugrats, Hey Arnold, I still watch those, and I find them even more hysterical than I did 10 years ago or whatnot.
Yeah. But I guess that was a tangent and a half.
Yeah.
So, Sonic 3, thoughts on that? One of the things I guess that we should note is that Sonic 3, if I'm not mistaken, kind of got nerfed because Sega decided to... They would split it into two games with Sonic and Knuckles, which is how we got the invention of Knuckles technology between the two games. So Sonic 3 is kind of like half of a game. Technically speaking, I think it's half of a game because I believe, and I've actually never beat Sonic 3. I'll admit that here. And it's not because I can't beat it. It's just kind of that I get bored with it by the time I get to the end. There's just something off about that game. And, yeah, and then with Sonic and Knuckles, which came out a bit afterwards, according to Wikipedia, they came out the same year. There was about an 8 months difference. You had to connect it to get the rest of the full game experience. So you ended up paying, at that time, $120 for a full game.
Wow.
That's a ripoff.
And nobody else has ever done, I think, a Hakon technology game. So you can see how successful that was. So I guess Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic 3, thoughts on those two?
I guess the lock-on cartridge sort of reminds me almost of something like Legend, like a slightly more successful of the Legend of Zelda Four Swords adventure games, where you would have to have like the Game Boy connectors, and it's like this long process to sort of experience the game in the way that it was intended to be experienced.
Which was a pain in the ass, because that was a fantastic game the one time we got enough GBAs in the same room to play it.
Yeah.
The fact that they kind of, like, everybody had to have a GBA, and then you all had to have Vint cables, which didn't come in the box standard, I believe.
But I think it's the same thing here to a lesser extent. I mean, the reason people want consoles is that easy... streamlined gaming experience. You know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to make sure your computer has the tech specs that you need to run the game. You don't need to make sure you have a controller that works, works well for the game you have. It's just, you have the console, put the game in, it works. And then when you start adding these other elements, the complication, I think, is a bit of a turnoff. But I think the nostalgia factor is still extremely awesome. I mean, just... even the concept of being able to put Sonic 1 and 2 on Sonic and Knuckles and also open up, be able to play as Knuckles through those two games with his different abilities. I think that's something that's just really cool. And I guess I think it's slightly a shame it didn't catch on, but I fully understand why, because I think the concept is a little bit of a turnoff.
Okay, I could be mistaken, but we couldn't play as Knuckles in Sonic 1.
No?
You can only play as him. I think you can only play the special stages.
Okay, that makes sense.
You could play as him in Sonic 2, which kind of breaks the game because he kind of defeats most of the platforming challenges if you can just kind of glide around the stages.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah. Okay, I did not know that you couldn't play as Knuckles. You can do the bonus stages, though?
It's kind of iffy. Let's see what Wikipedia says. In development of Sonic and Knuckles, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, so you can only do like special stages, and that's only if you leave the game running for a bit.
Okay, but you can do something with it.
Yeah. Because I think it's the same way that Sonic, they never put the spin dash back into the original game. It's because it would change the feel of the game. So, 2D Sonic games. We have fans of Sonic 2, not so great on Sonic 1, nothing on Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
I still really like Sonic and Knuckles. And Sonic 3.
Okay.
I guess they're alright. I guess technically speaking, they were good, but just playing through them again, something just felt off about them. I don't know exactly what, but just didn't feel right compared to the second one.
Yeah, we didn't mention, but I guess 3 also had the introduction of some of those special shields. Like, he had the shield that would attracted the coins, the rings, I should say.
Yeah.
He had the shield that would protect him from underwater threats, so he didn't have to get the air bubbles. Mm-hmm. And then I think he had just a general shield. Did he have a fire resistance shield as well?
Something else that I wanted to mention about these two games, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, it really feels like we were talking about how this was originally supposed to be one sort of epic game, and yeah. I think it definitely feels like that, too. There's this sort of cinematic feel to, especially the beginning of both of those titles, where it's sort of leading you through this, air quotes, narrative of sort of what's going on. And what it does to, like, ramp up the excitement. It's Sonic 3 that I'm thinking of specifically right now with, you go through the first part of the act, and unlike the previous Sonic games where cut to Act 2, it leads you directly into it and continues going. Knuckles, like, lit the entire forest on fire, and then it sort of says Act 2, and you just keep going right into it. And I think sort of the things that they were trying to pull off there are definitely more geared to how someone would design a game today than I think what was common back in whatever year in the 90s that Sonic 3 had come out. So I think it was breaking some new ground in that way in what to expect from sort of the consistency of how the game all flows together based upon the levels. If any of that made sense. It's hard for me to explain.
I think it does. I guess we should finish up on the Genesis era with Sonic 3D Blast.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I remember this one.
I try not to.
Sort of.
Oh,
it's when Sega really didn't know what to do with Sonic in 3D, and they just kind of picked up on the newest gimmick at the time, which was the isometric perspective, which I think was kind of the thing with Super Mario RPG. And yeah, it was not fun. I mean, the later 3D games kind of try to find a way to get his speed. This one didn't have speed at all. It was kind of like a show labyrinth of stages, and it wasn't enjoyable at all. So, anybody else? I mean, you can all disagree with me if you want.
I mean, I've played the game before. I barely remember it. I just remember what the game looked like. You had to collect something within the stages.
Oh, yeah, you had to collect those. I think you had to collect the animals, and if you didn't have all 5 of them, you couldn't beat the stage.
Yeah, that's all I remember. I remember having fun with it. It wasn't, like, the most amazing thing out there, but it wasn't horrible.
I would go horrible.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna... You can go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I was writing down as I was playing was that I noticed, like, I know 1996 controls were quite different. I played GoldenEye a lot, which came out in, like, 97. But even for 1996 or whenever that came out, controls, like, oh, man, it's just, I can't put it into words how bad it is with the, just, and, hold on here. Let me compose my thoughts. Trying to control them in 3D with the controls that you have to use is just horrendously bad, I guess, well, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you have to realize that that was kind of the norm for a while, because even though the N64 came out and had the analog stick, the PlayStation, they didn't have an analog stick for the first, I want to say, 3 years? And I don't think the Saturn had an analog stick, so a lot of 3D games were used with the D-pad. And I'm sure a lot of those games would feel dated and bad now because of, like, that's why Warcraft always had the tank controls until recently. Mm-hmm. And Resident Evil was the same way, where you just kind of developed these games around the concept that you didn't have full 3D movement.
Yeah, but still, I'm still going to complain about it even though...
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. It's one of the reasons the game kind of... There's a lot of reasons. It's so... It's kind of... It doesn't look that great. And it controls iffy, and the fact that you have to get stuff in this stage. So, I guess that would be it for Sonic's Sega Genesis adventures. He would actually skip the Saturn for the most part. There was a version of Sonic 3D Fast on that, but other than that, he would call it a day. Welcome back to the Sonic the Hedgehog Nerds on the Rock special feature. Sonic had quite the start in the 2D realm, and then he had Sonic 3D Fast. And if that was Sonic's only bad experience in 3D, I wouldn't be so upset. But the next, I guess, 15 years, it was used trying to correct Sonic into the 3D space. And that met with variant success. And I guess the first title would be the marquee launch title for the Dreamcast in 1999, Sonic Adventure. Who here has played that?
I played the Xbox Live Arcade demo of that game.
Does it hold up? Well, I guess if you just played it, you didn't play it originally. at the time, and I haven't played it recently, so I can't really speak, it was a phenomenal game. When you were Sonic.
Yeah.
When you are Sonic, it's an awesome game. It gives you a great sense of speed, scale, tons of great environments. I assume the demo is the first stage where you're being chased by a giant killer whale on the beach shore. That was like one of those, that's one of those kind of game images that kind of stays in your head.
Yeah, I agree.
And then there was everything else in the game, which was not so great. This was the first game that kind of took control away from Sonic for the majority of the game, as you had to play as Tails, Knuckles, Big the Cat, and I think Rouge?
Rouge, yeah. Rouge the Bat.
Was she in this one, or she introduced in...
It might have been... No, it was Adventure 2 where she was in there.
But there was somebody else. I know.
Was it Amy? Yeah, I think it was Amy.
Amy, there we go. And each of these people were given a different type of game. Sonic was the super speed, of course. I think Tails was he kind of helped you out with the aircrafts and stuff. Knuckles had a search and seek mission where you had to find 3 Chaos Emeralds in each of his stages before you can continue. Amy, I don't remember, but the biggest offender was Big the Cat, where you literally had to fish in a Sonic game. If there is anything in this world that is the complete opposite of going as fast as possible, it is perhaps fishing. And not only that, but you could beat the game with Sonic and not beat the game at all, because you had to complete every single mission with the characters in order to unlock the true final boss, which was the giant Chaos Water monster.
Interesting.
So thoughts on Sonic Adventures 1?
I remember playing it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I remember that final boss was just so memorable, though. I remember being just so humongously huge. And I mean, I don't really remember the other, I do remember the other stages, but I didn't mind playing through them. I was kind of little when I played at the time, and I just loved every second of it. I'm pretty sure if I went back in there, I think there is a lot to enjoy in the game, but it's not up to par as the other 2D Sonic games, where it's not as revolutionary or remarkable.
Like I said, it was a remarkable game when you were Sonic. Anything else was, and the final boss was good. It was kind of out of field, but it was an interesting. Actually, no, if I'm not mistaken, I think that boss kind of develops throughout the course of the game, where you just kind of, you meet him when he's like just the monster, like in a human form, and then as he continues getting more Chaos Emeralds, he gets bigger and bigger until you get the final end boss, which was a nice touch. I haven't played it recently, but I enjoyed it at the time. I'm actually surprised Adam beat the game. So that would this be your first Sonic game that you defeated?
Not the first. I also defeated Sonic Adventure 2, Sonic Heroes, and I'm on my way to beating Sonic the Hedgehog 4 Episode 1. I haven't played it in a while, but I got to get back into it.
John?
Like all of my Dreamcast memories, Sonic Adventure has this like distant, fuzzy memory of playing the demo units at Family Toy Warehouse, which I don't know how large of a chain that was, but we had one by our house. And I also have weird memories of playing the Virtual Boy there as well. If I remember that clearly, I think it was the Virtual Boy.
I don't think anybody remembers the Virtual Boy, Kay.
But anyway, the so the Dreamcast, I would play the demo of Sonic and Crazy Taxi, depending on which unit was available. But that's really all the memory I have of playing that game.
Okay, and Dylan?
I had fun with the demo, but camera kept screwing up, and there's some weird first-person mode that I didn't like, but overall it was fun enough, I guess.
Was there a first-person mode?
Burr and then it like goes into, I don't know if it's first person exactly, but like camera zooms in and you can actually like look around a bit.
It sounds like they were trying to mimic, because I know what's it called does that. Mario 64 did that in Zelda, but yeah. I don't know why you would ever need to like explore a Sonic game. I guess
useless.
Personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was followed up by Sonic Adventures 2. Which kind of had the same problem, but became even worse in some regards, where they split the game into a Heroes faction and a Villains faction, which had Sonic, Knuckles, and Tails on one side, and I believe Rouge, Shadow, and Dr. Eggman on the other side. And each person had a similar set of, Sonic and Shadow were the speed stages, Tails and Dr. Robotnik were like the bot stages, and then Knuckles and Rouge were the search and seek missions. And the biggest change I knew with that is in regards to Knuckles and Rouge was that in Sonic Adventures, whenever you did a Knuckles stage, you found, if you were near a Chaos Emerald or a Master Emerald or whatever they wanted to be called, it would automatically give you a motion detector, and you can dig it up and find it there. Whereas in this one, you had to find them in order. So even if you knew where another one was, it didn't help because you had the one before it. Which kind of made it even more linear than it was in the previous Sonic Adventure title. And in this game, I think the final boss literally comes out of nowhere. It's a giant space station. So, thoughts on this?
Well, I, for one, haven't played it, so.
I played it, just I haven't played it in a long time. I remember it being good. I feel like the graphics in Sonic Adventure might have been better than Adventure 2. That's just my opinion, but from what I remember looking at, I definitely remember Adventure 2 looking a little worse.
It could be, it depends on, I think, the port. Because I think the game, if you played the battle one, I think because they added so much content that they never really increase the graphical output of it.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
I've never played the GameCube version, but I have heard complaints. Like, I think Sonic, because I think how they did it is Sonic Adventure Battle came out on the GameCube, and then later on they brought out Sonic Adventure DX, which was improved over the GameCube the Dreamcast version. Mm-hmm. But they, because Sonic Adventure was just like a straight port with like added stuff, they kind of screwed up in the port of it. And for some reason, bringing up that, it reminds me that Sonic Adventures 1 and 2 actually marked a dramatic turn in the music department for the Sonic games, whereas before they were pretty much like MIDI files or whatever, that the game started to go with a more rock edge.
That's an interesting
and, premise. Yeah, and most notably, it went with the theme songs, which none of the Sonic games really had before. So I believe Sonic Adventure 1 had Open Your Heart, and Sonic Adventure 2 had...
Live and Learn.
Yeah,
both of those on my iPod. Love those songs.
I actually really like them too, and I get a lot of crap for it. The only way I know of them is through the Smash Brothers stage. I have on sound, you know, you can pick your sound setting what music gets picked. And yeah. I left all those on, and I always get a lot of crap for leaving it on.
My favorite from that would be Sonic Boom from Sonic CD, which we didn't talk about, but I don't know how many people who actually own this on a Sega CD. No one, huh?
No. I knew someone who had it, but I did not.
I got one recently, I guess like 2005, but then I found it didn't work because there's like a whole if you didn't have a certain Genesis, it basically used two different power supplies, and then you had to like cook up all these wires, and it's a really cumbersome mess to try to get working. I do have it on one of the Sonic collections on the GameCube. I think it's Sonic Mega Collection. But I don't play that much. It was a fun game with the past and future twist, but there's not much. I mean, there's not much to it. But yes, Sonic Adventures 1 and 2, and I think for the most part, every Sonic game since then has had a huge rock theme song. There's Open Your Heart, Live and Earn. There's My World from Sonic the Hedgehog 360. There's Seven Rings from Sonic and the Secret Rings. There's, I forget which one, Sonic Heroes. But yeah, they're big, they're cheesy, and they're kind of terrible, but I enjoyed them all the same. As I mentioned before, I have the Sonic Escape from the City theme song from Sonic Adventure 2.
I have a random question. Did any of these Sonic Dreamcast games incorporate the little video screen on the memory card?
Oh yeah, I actually did not. The first one did. I don't remember about the second one, but you could actually raise your little chow, which were like Tamagotchi's virtual pets. And I actually think that was the reason that VMUs had a screen and buttons and stuff was for that game, so that you can raise them in the screen and then they kind of grew up in the game when you transferred it back. I don't remember if Sonic Adventure 2 did that.
Because I just remember, you know, growing up, me and my friends didn't really question the stupidity at the time of the Nintendo 64 controller, which is one of the worst controllers ever created, looking back at it.
Really? Yep.
And now, there's actually a great Cracked article that you should read about the 64 controller. But anyway, and so that never came to mind of how sort of poor of a controller 64 was. But I remember when the Dreamcast was out, playing it at the demo units and being shown that there was a video sort of screen on the memory card, it just didn't connect with me at all. And I would just remember looking at it, being very confused about why they had decided to do this and what the point was. Because it also made the memory cards cost like $80.
And the battery died pretty damn quick. Because I also had Skies of Arcadia, which used it as a way to raise your... one of your main characters, in RPGs, it's that one character who has like an animal they have to control or something and raise. And yeah, and if your VMU was broken, it was just kind of annoying because it would always make this chirping sound. But the batteries were dead, so it didn't really come out that great. And I didn't know anybody who actually ever replaced the batteries in those things. But yeah, Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 were decent efforts for getting Sonic into 3D, but I think they relied way too heavily on everybody else but Sonic. And that would become an even bigger problem with his next game, which was Sonic Heroes. Which, if I'm, I really, this is when I kind of started separating myself from Sonic games. But he, if I'm not mistaken, this is a game with four teams of three people. And you couldn't break from that formation.
Yeah, you're right about that. You could switch between your characters, but you can't, like, put different, like, every character had their certain ability. Like, there was one character that was the speed, one character that was flying, and then another that was, I forget.
So, all three teams were pretty much the same? I always thought that each team had, like, a different, how do you say this? A different, like, ability. Like, I thought, like, each team had, but it was essentially the same four teams, just with different characters swaps. So what's the point of the characters then? And looking at Wiki, it was Team Sonic, which was Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles, which makes sense. Team Dark, which is Shadow, Rouge, and Omega. Team Rose, which is Amy, Cream the Rabbit, and Big the Cat. That just sounds like an awful team. And Team Chaotix, which apparently is just made up people. Espio the Chameleon, Charmy B, and Victor the Crocodile.
They were in a Sega 32X game, I remember. I forgot the title, but they were definitely in a past title.
Yeah, it just kind of sounds like they were running out of people. Like, damn it, we need four teams. It's just
start them
three more people. Yeah. So anybody actually played? Like I said, I have very limited experience with that game.
I played through the whole game. I barely remember it. I remember, like, a month before the game came out, Mario Kart Double Dash, if you pre-order, you get the demo disc.
And yes, I was just going to say that.
Sonic Heroes, a level of Sonic Heroes on there. I remember playing that, and I was like, holy crap, this is insane. I remember getting the game, and I played through it. It was fun, I remember. It wasn't, like, anything extraordinary, but I remember enjoying it. I barely remember anything. I just remember, the only thing I remember that game is the first level with Team Sonic.
You know, I like the demo disc as well. The demo on the demo disc for Double Dash of Sonic Heroes. But I didn't like it enough where I actually went to buy it. But I do remember playing through the demo maybe half dozen times.
Yeah, I remember the demo disc. I don't remember playing it that much. I remember playing Billy Hatchet and the Cracked Egg or something like that.
Oh, that was such a great game. They need to make another one of those, like, for Kinect or something. Billy Hatchet.
Well, I think the guy, the creator of Sonic, is actually no longer with Sega. And I don't know if they would ever revive it. I don't think it's all that great. But you never know.
They could try again.
They can. But, I mean, Sega has other priorities. They need to make at least 50 Sonic games a year.
And they need to make some crappy Marvel movie games.
Yes, they do. And they need to give their characters guns, which brings us to Shadow the Hedgehog,
which
was a controversial game at the time.
Yes,
because Shadow was given a gun and a motorcycle.
Because it was offensively bad, that's why it was controversial.
It was offensively bad, and everybody always joked that they had to give the Black Hedgehog the gun. So, yeah, people kind of picked that the wrong way. Sega probably shouldn't have done it either way, but was anybody honored enough to actually play this game?
No. I remember X-Play giving it a 1 out of 5. I'm like, no way am I getting this.
I did play a lot of it for, I don't know why. Probably
curiosity's sake.
Hours.
What were your thoughts?
It's brutal. Like, it's just like a shooter, but it's a poor man's third person shooter that moves too fast, and there's not really any reason to attack anyone because you have guns, but the guns suck, so like you can't really do anything. You can't win anyway. And the controls are pretty bad, and one thing I really hated going back to it is like the opening cutscene is like 5 minutes long and you can't skip it.
Oh, that's the worst. I hate when video games do that. It pisses me off so much.
And it also looked bad even in 2005. I was like, this is crappy looking when I just played Splinter Cell.
Yeah, and some reason it got worse for Sonic with the reintroduction of Sonic the Hedgehog for the 360 and PS3 in 2006, which saw the introduction of, I want to say, Silver the Hedgehog. So for those keeping track, this is our third major hedgehog in the franchise, and Silver was notable for having his telepathic or telekinesis powers. One of those two. I had the distinct honor of playing this game because it came with my PS3, and I don't want to talk about it.
I saw the review on Reviews on the Run, which is a Canadian show that they review games. They did not like it at all, so I decided to avoid it like the plague.
I mean, if you could think of anything that you would hate in a video game, it has it. The biggest issue I had with it, and this is one of the reasons I hated it so much, is that you can't control Sonic. There's just something about it that he doesn't control tightly at all, and you just kind of press in one direction, and the guy goes like zip-zapping across the stage, and it's annoying because, like, you know, you want to have some type of control over your character when playing a game, and it doesn't feel like it's like he's running on water and you're trying to stop him in his tracks. Then the game itself is glitchy as hell. You would always run into parts where you either couldn't progress, or you'd glitch to the stage and get stuck, or some type of debris would fall on you, which would end your streak because you can't. There's just a lot of stuff that would stop you from making it forward in the game. It's like Sega knew they had a turd on their hands, and they're like, you know what? We don't want you to play past this part. Please forgive us.
Oh, actually, that does remind me of something about Shadow the Hedgehog. There's some weird glitch where, like, you would do a lock-on hit move, but then it would screw up, and you could just, like, go flying and die a lot. So that also made that pretty pointless.
That actually happens in Sonic the Hedgehog, is that the lock on move, it's supposed to lock onto enemies, and, you know, you figured once you lock onto enemies, but sometimes you would overshoot the enemy, or you would hit the enemy, but after the jump, it would not land you on ground, because of where the enemy was, you'd end up just coming into your death, which is just terrible, evil design. You either give me an option to kill an enemy and kill myself, or make progress, but you don't tell me that ahead of time.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's not what they wanted to do, but that's how it came out. So anybody else with horrible memories of Sonic the Hedgehog?
I just remember these games coming out, and as a, you know, someone who grew up on Sonic, always just being really disappointed by listening to various game podcasts and reviewers talk about what was in them, especially with Sonic Unleashed. I haven't played it, but repeatedly I would hear people talk about how great the side-scrolling levels were, but sort of tainted by these werehogs. And then there was like one where he had like a sword.
Sonic and the Black Knight.
And
I mean, we can just kind of group the rest of them together because I don't think many. I think at this point most people kind of grew tired of the Sonic series, and I think Sega had no idea what to do with him. So you had Sonic and the Secret Rings, which was pretty much a return of like Aladdin and the Arabian Nights, with Sonic as Aladdin and trying to stop an evil genie, I guess, or something like that.
I remember seeing like ads for that in magazines.
It's actually a fairly decent game, I think, anyhow. The problem with it is that it's kind of built on a system of, like, an RPG, where you have to level up Sonic's abilities, and so part of that is, like, it's on rails, so he's always running, you just kind of tilt him in a direction. And it's like his initial top speed doesn't get that high until, like, halfway through the game. So to a lot of people, it was kind of like it's a crappy Sonic game, because it's on rails, and he doesn't run that fast. But as the game progresses, it does kind of get better, and I don't want to be one of those people, because I always hate when reviews say, you know, it's like the first 60 hours, and the game finally gets good. It's not good in the first hour, it's probably not worth my time. Then there was Sonic Unleashed, which we mentioned, and yeah, it was the daytime levels were pretty good. It was the Werehog stages, which kind of took the momentum out of the game. And they're trying to remedy that with Sonic Colors, which I'm really excited for, because it's just those type of daytime levels on its own. And I played it at New York Comic Con. It was a really excellent demo. I was actually surprised by that. But yeah, there were the Werehog stages. And I think that the Sonic Unleashed is the perfect example of what was wrong with 3D Sonic games, in that Sega has a good idea with the Sonic section of most of their games. It's just that they've had this need to pad it with anything other than Sonic.
Yeah.
Because that's what Sonic Adventures 1 and 2 suffered from all the side characters. Sonic Heroes suffered from the team format. Sonic Unleashed suffered from the Werehog stages. Sonic the Hedgehog just suffered from being a game. And Sonic and the Black Knight, I've never played this, but they gave him a sword, and apparently he doesn't really kill anything with it. I don't know.
It's just Sonic being given a sword.
Yeah.
I mean,
it could be worse.
What's equivalent to that?
They could have given him a gun.
No. That's reserved for the Black Hedgehogs.
Yeah.
Apparently the blue ones are noble, they get swords. The black ones are evil, they get guns. But yeah. And I mean, that's pretty much the Sonic series in a nutshell. He has not had a decent run in the past, I want to say 10 years. I continue to enjoy his games, though. I mean, I continue to be a fan, and I continue to hope beyond hope that the games would get better. And I guess that brings us to Sonic 4.
Indeed.
Which I have not been enjoying at all, personally. It has some good ideas, it has some new ideas, but a lot of it feels like they're just trying to remake Sonic 2 with the elements they introduced in either the handheld or the 2D games, or the 3D games, like the knock onto enemies, which kind of works sometimes, but on the same hand, I think it kind of breaks the game when you are kind of forced to use it and you have to know where the enemies are ahead of time. Because it's like it's a split-second reaction. I kind of find that his speed is too... I mean, it's always been momentum-based, but I feel like he takes too long to get going.
Definitely.
And the game tries to force you to slow down way too often for it to be worth it, where it's like, you know, it takes like 5 seconds to get going, but you have to stop every 15 seconds to actually do some platforming.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing about Sonic 4. It's more of a platformer than it is a Sonic game, where Sonic, you just speed through the levels. This one is more of you have to figure out where you're going, jump from platform to platform. They made it a little bit of a slower paced game. I mean, that's fine. It's a good game, but it's not what a Sonic game should be.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe they get it right with the other chapters, but for right now, it's going in the right direction. If it had more time in the oven, it could have been a great contender. I really think $15 is a bit much to ask for it.
Especially considering there'll be one out in like a few months.
Yeah, yeah. The episodic thing has been a complete turnoff to me. I was really excited to pick up and try this, but just something about it being split up. And not only that, but calling it Sonic 4, episode 1, 2, and 3, and 4, I'd almost rather them do Sonic 4, maybe put a little bit more in. Even Sonic 4 with maybe 2 or 3 more zones for $20, and then Sonic 5 comes out a year or two later. I would be on board with that.
I'm almost certain that they're going to package together all 3 episodes as a Sonic 4 disc game.
I would see them doing that.
I think the problem with the going with episodic, at least to me, is that it's too wide of a gap. Because they announced this in, February? It's now October, and episode 1 just came out. If you're going to episodic, you need to, we should have a date for episode 2 by now. We should know, episode 1's in October, episode 2 is in January, episode 3 is in April, or something like that. Where I feel like we won't get episode 2 until, the summer of next year.
I feel like episodic should also be 1 a month. It has to be, a continuing thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's the problem with a lot of episodic video games. It's like, you want to be episodic, but it comes out in such a pace that you don't wait. You don't watch a TV show and then wait 6 months for the second episode.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that, where it's like, if you want to call it episodic, you have this, you don't even have to have the whole game ready, but you have it where, Sonic Sonic 4 Episode 1's here. 2 months later, Sonic 4 Episode 2's here. Sonic 4 Episode 3's here. Boom, boom, boom. Except, you know, like, this got pushed back from the summer to begin with because they didn't think the game was that great. Who's to say, you know, like, who knows how they feel about the second part of the game?
And you also want to be consistent. You don't want that all of a sudden, like, let's say they change the momentum
the controls.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then,
guys, I gotta get going.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. See you later.
Later. Okay. Go on.
Sorry. Let me rethink what I was saying.
Were saying that if they change the momentum.
Yeah, so if they fix the momentum problem in episode 2, then all of a sudden when the disc-based one comes out and they're trying to tie it all into one game, then it changes, you know, depending on which zone you're playing. And so I just think it's there are things where I think it makes sense to do episodic, but this certainly isn't one of them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like if they fix the problems that I had with episode 1, it kind of defeats the purpose of being episodic, but you kind of want them to fix the problem so that you can actually make a good game that you enjoy. And it's kind of like, it's a catch-22. Like, do you fix it and then kind of screw over the people who bought episode 1? Or do you kind of like patch in episode 1 so it plays like episode 2? Or do you leave it alone and hope that the people enjoyed it enough to buy episode 2? And the other thing, and I guess this is probably just me, but the Sonic War, to me, episodic implies more of a story-based game, whereas Sonic, as we started off with, it's hard to kind of decipher a story. Like, we don't even know the motivation of the main character, well, the main antagonist. So, it's like, what purpose do you have to play episode? Because from what I've seen, episode 4 kind of gives you a complete game. You get a big final boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the 7 Chaos Emeralds, and you can play as Super Sonic. What's driving people to buy episode 2?
One of the things I also didn't like about the episodic thing was how they sort of tried to justify it by saying that they were going to listen to what the community had to say to improve. And, you know, it just almost seems like a cop-out answer for what is obviously a marketing type thing that they're trying out to bank more money off of it. Because, you know, going back to, you know, the Sonic 2 days when there wasn't a really easy way to listen to the community about the game besides sales, if the only possible way is to make Sonic 4 good to listen to the community after every single episode, then why is Sonic 2 so good? Or, you know, why were old games successful? And it's because, you know, they're bringing people in to do testing and actually, you know, work through the game before it comes out rather than, and again, I don't know if this is the main reason they're doing it, but it's the reason they told us they're doing it is to sort of throw it out there and see how people react and then trying to fix the problems later. I just think is a really terrible way to go about.
It's novel because they did part of the delay originally was because there was leaked footage of like the mineshaft level, which just looked awful. And a lot of people on the internet complained about it. Granted, a lot of people on the internet complained about anything. But, you know, they went back to the drawing board. They said, you know what? You know, people weren't having fun with it. We're going to change it. We delayed it 3 months. The problem with that, again, becomes, like, for an episodic game, you don't want it to be like, oh, you know, people didn't enjoy that in the first one. We'll just kind of push it back and we'll do it again to see how they like this, you know, how they like these changes. But we'll delay the game a couple of weeks, and then it kind of defeats the purpose of being episodic at that point.
And I mean, you don't need to do episodic to be able to benefit off of that feedback either. I mean, you look at something like Infamous 2, where they went back to the drawing board to literally redraw the entire main character because there was some backlash from the community on them changing that. And, you know, that's a full release game that you know, they're bringing back. Or they're spending more time, and I believe they pushed back the release of that for, you know, one of the main reasons to fix this problem. And so, I don't know. I'm just annoyed at Sega.
Okay. And I guess the final thing we can touch on is, I don't, Sonic Colors, which I mentioned before. I tried at New York Comic Con, and I actually enjoyed what I've seen. I've enjoyed everything I've seen of the game so far, and I'm honestly just kind of waiting for Sega to announce that one thing that's just going to piss me off beyond belief. Like he turns into like a weird hedgehog thing again, or like he's actually an alien from outer space or something.
Or he's dead
along those lines. Yeah, something. But I mean, it looks like a solid game. It controls well. It looks nice. It has great music. So I noticed something that they're not telling us. Does anybody else have expectations for that?
I have zero.
Too much about it.
I wish Nintendo, this is one of the few times I wish Nintendo offered demos, because I think it's one of those games that would benefit from that. I've tried it, I've enjoyed it, but I really want more hands-on with it to see, because I only got to play a good stage, and I watch other people play, because the demo was so packed that they only, on Sunday, that they only allowed one person, you know, one stage per person instead of the two acts per zone or whatever.
Actually, this does look pretty cool. Hopefully they, you know, don't screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt it. The first reviews I was in 86. It looks like it takes a lot of pages out of Super Mario Galaxy, where, you know, like the different power-ups and the fact that it's a like in space, so they just kind of go wild with the themes. Like there's one that's like a giant cafeteria. Like you have like burgers in the background and you're bouncing off of cakes and stuff like that. And, yeah, I think that's what platformers need. Because, I mean, a platformer is, I think, like 75% level design. And if you want something dull and boring, it just won't cut it.
Yeah.
So, I think that can cut a wrap for our Sonic Nerds on the Rocks episode 17. For Adam, who had to step out early, Dillion, and John. Well, before we go, do either one of you gentlemen want to plug anything?
Well, I'm not involved with it in any way, but I have been liking it. It's a podcast that Games Radar does called Talk Radar. I've been listening for, a month and a half, and not to take away from our audience, but it's pretty funny stuff that also talks about games and nerd stuff. So,
sweet deal. And John?
Twitter.com/JohnTilton. Anything else would be from that.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next
thanks
week.
Thanks for having us.
And next week is our horror-themed episode, which should be fun. So until then, as always, same bat time, same bat channel.
Bye. Goodbye.
See ya.